Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. We're here to talk about how we can empower ourselves, live a longer and healthier and happier life. Today, we're going to explore a new study indicating how consuming chocolate every week lowers your risk of diabetes from the University of Maine, and how the rhythm of breathing affects memory and fear, Northwestern University, how probiotics can reduce dental caries, brand new study, University of Chile, and how Alzheimer's disease is found to be a diabetic disorder of the brain. That's something radically new, and that's from Tohoku University in Japan. There was a meta-analysis that affirms the association of calcium supplements with improved blood factors. This is again from Medical University in China. And how a case study chronicles the first blood, the brain blood, meaning when you eat, when you consume an energy drink, your brain can bleed, University of Alabama. And how black cumin seed oil that I've been talking about for a long time suppresses disease-causing inflammation, and a lot more on health and healing. Also, how the CDC is intentionally blocking the testimony of a whistleblower in a medical malpractice case. So whose side are they on? Why are they always defending the status quo and not the consumer? We'll explore that. We'll also be going to our audio files today, continuing with showing you who really produces fake news. We're going to have an award-winning reporter who covered many stories, did a lot of really outstanding broadcasting, who's going to show us exactly what is behind all this. And she is claiming, and we'll hear from her, that CNN, where she worked, was paid to do certain stories and to kill other stories. I believe that it's time that we decided about maybe doing a national boycott of CNN. And of course, that they're already losing a lot of audience, but I believe that they should be exposed for what they've done. They were just absolutely reprehensible in their coverage of this last presidential race. So biased, so supportive of Hillary Clinton and the Democrats. They don't represent real news anymore, but we're going to share that with you. We're also going to share with you how biased the media is by how much time they gave Jill Stein in the entire election campaign, the major media. You won't believe the number. It is so infinitesimal. So these are the things we're going to explore today. Let's begin. First up is a study from Maine, and it says, new research from Maine Syracuse study confirms that persons who eat chocolate at least once a week have a lower prevalence of diabetes and are at lower risk for a diagnosis of diabetes 4 to 5 years later. The study also indicates that the relation between the frequency of chocolate consumption may be due to an active choice on the part of the diabetics. For example, diabetics may choose to reduce their frequency of chocolate consumption in an effort to reduce sweets, noted the researchers. Here's what's important. If you have a healthy chocolate, a dark chocolate, a real good cacao chocolate without dairy and with just natural sweeteners, that has a low glycemic factor, but it also is very rich in polyphenols, and that helps the heart, it helps your epithelium, it helps the lining of the arteries, and so it's good for diabetics. So that's excellent. Also, herbs can one particular herb and specifically has insulin-like properties to aid diabetics. This is the University of Applied Sciences in Australia. They talk about compounds extracted from the herbs purslane. There's also another herb that I know is very important for diabetics that we just don't use in this country, and it's called Tindora, T-I-N-D-O-R-A. And this will reduce blood sugar levels if you have elevated blood sugar. So purslane, I don't really consider an herb as much as I consider it a bitter. And it grows wild. If you go to the farmer's market, you'll see the sweeter purslane. They're smaller, and they're very juicy, and they have a crispness to it, similar to a cucumber in mouthfeel and consistency, but a slightly bittersweet quality. Now, when they get large, the larger purslane, it's about the size, each leaf's about the size of a dime, and it's a little thicker, but it's terrific for you, a little more bitter. They're great in salads, and all over the Mediterranean, they eat purslane on a daily basis. It quite simply is one of the healthiest greens you can ever put into your body. And you can eat the whole thing. You can dice up the stem, the little leaves, and make yourself a purslane salad. In fact, a great salad to have would be to take some pansies and purslane and roll them together, meaning mix them together in a bowl, and then put in some pomegranates, and then put a raspberry tangerine sauce on top of that. Serve that as a salad. That's a really exotic salad. Great mouthfeel and taste. And you just, it looks beautiful too. So anyhow, having purslane will lower your blood sugar because there's specific extracts in there that promote the transportation of glucose into your muscles and fat cells. And that increases glucose, which is your blood sugar absorption, and lowers your blood glucose levels in the process. So it's really good for anyone with metabolic syndrome. So again, I like to share things that are new and exciting. Also from UCLA, researchers uncovered new evidence linking inflammation and increased prostate cancer risk. I've mentioned many times that all cancers are due in part to inflammation, chronic inflammation, where on a regular basis you're drinking coffee or having alcohol or eating fried foods or deep-fried foods or barbecued foods, and that it is all pro-inflammatory. Sugar's pro-inflammatory. Now, if you also happen to have a virus, that's pro-inflammatory. So that's all going to increase your risk of prostate cancer. So the key here is just to go towards an alkaline diet, which is a plant-based diet with lots of fresh juices. And a great juice to have each day is apple juice with the juice of one lemon in it. So apple lemon is a phenomenal relief for constipation. If you have vitamin C on top of that, you're probably going to vacate anywhere between 3 to 6 times in a day. And for some people who have been constipated and bloated with brain fog and a little feeling out of it, this just opens them up. It allows that debris to go out of the body, which is dead cells, bacteria, and oligocellulose, and they just feel so much better. Apple juice with lemon. And if you want to do it the way they do it in Italy, put 1 teaspoon of olive oil in there. And that could really help everyone who has regularity problems. From Northwestern University, they looked at the rhythm of your breathing and how it affects memory and fear. I'll quote this. Northwestern medicine scientists have discovered for the first time that the rhythm of breathing creates electrical activity in the human brain that enhances emotional judgments and memory recall. Wow. That's terrific to understand. I'll explain why in a moment. These effects on behavior depend critically on whether you inhale or exhale, and whether you breathe through your nose or mouth. In the study, individuals were able to identify a fearful face more quickly if they encountered the face when breathing in compared to breathing out. Quote, one of the major findings in this study is that there is a dramatic difference in brain activity in the amygdala, in the hippocampus, during inhalation compared to exhaling. The study was published in the Journal of Neuroscience. Okay, here's why I believe that there's even more to this, and I see a different message in this. When you get excited, angry, fearful, you go into a rage, the voice level increases, your breathing is shortened, you begin to breathe through your throat, your muscles tense, you become strained, you see the blood vessels in the face and the neck, and what happens is it creates an internal mechanism similar to fear, which constricts the body, constricts your muscles. Your blood pressure increases, your blood sugar level increases, digestion is disrupted, all of your stress hormones, like cortisol and epinephrine, increase, and blood pressure in the brain increases, creating the perfect environment for what are called micro or mini strokes, or a major stroke. So, if you, on the other hand, as much as possible, try not to hyper-breathe, but rather stay calm, keep your breathing, mouth breathing deep and diaphragmatic, meaning you force the oxygen into the lungs and then exhale, and just keep an even, smooth breathing. That will help you not create everything else, not create the high blood pressure, the high blood sugar, the stress hormones, and put yourself at risk for a microstroke. Now, that also affects a more even breathing. For example, when, if you notice, a cat, by the way, monkeys do the same thing, they'll begin to purr when they're at a very deep level of relaxation. But I have found, having rescued over 3,000 animals in my entire adult life, I rescue them, I rehabilitate them, which takes a lot of time and a lot of love, because an animal is ready to return to the wilds, which is ideal, or to be given a home where they'll be given love, if they cannot be returned, only when they have trust. And it's that heart rhythm and the heart breathing that frequently brings that trust, where you'll see the you'll see the little creature come up and just lay right on your chest. And then when you're breathing, and you're breathing deeply, and you're relaxed, and your voice is relaxed, they begin to harmonize the heartbeat. It's part of what is known as Bell's theorem that goes way back to the beginning of the last century, where a person noticed that when they moved a clock from one room to another, where the clock was swinging, a grandfather clock, the pendulum was swinging opposite the other one in the other room, when they were put side by side in time, one day they saw that they were swinging in harmony. How was that possible? That went against all the laws of mechanics and physics at the time, and hence the notion of Bell's theorem, that there's a way of harmonizing your life. And I have found this, the harmonization with animals, where a dog knows where you're at emotionally and can harmonize with it. So once you're in harmony, then the creature, whatever the creature may be, looks forward to being in your presence, looks forward to being near you. And especially if you are calm, because that's how they regain trust. Where people are hyper, where people are angry, where people are yelling, where there's a very kinetic energy, the animal is frequently picking up on that and is reacting to it and no longer has that trust. So I take it to a wider perspective when I look at these studies. So if you can improve your memory by relaxing your breathing, if you can reduce fear by relaxing your breathing, think of all the situations that you're in that you wouldn't over-respond to, overreact to. So just the fact that someone else is angry or upset or has gone off emotionally doesn't mean you have to react to it. And deep breathing frequently is the way you get out of that. From Loma Linda University, they have a great medical school. They do a lot of good research, more than any other university in the world, on a plant-based diet. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of quality studies they've done on living a longer life, adding years onto your life with a plant-based diet, reversing all forms of disease with a plant-based diet. So if you ever want quality, in-depth research, medical research, use Loma Linda University's online medical library. In any case, they did a study, and they found out that soy, and we're always talking about non-genetically engineered soy, benefits as estrogenic concerns recede. Quote, the research into the health benefits of soy foods continues to accumulate, and also they're saying that it's good, and this was published in the journal Nutrients, it's good across the board. There was a lot of misinformation that was put out about soy. I debated the person who was putting it out on my show over a two-day period, an hour each day. He was using information from the Weston Price Foundation, which advocates a meat-based diet, lots of dairy and eggs and animal fats and animal proteins, and they have a whole campaign against soy, which is fine. They can do that. That's their right. But at the same time, their information is grossly flawed. I had 5,000 studies I'd accumulated before the debate. I like to be prepared. 98% of those studies showed that soy benefited you in a major way. And these were high-quality studies. And I could find no study in the scientific literature that eating a meat-based diet improved your heart or blood pressure or longevity. They were all negative. So, unfortunately, people will look at headlines and trust the headlines without doing any further research. And especially if a person has a popular book out there, they'll make the rounds and people will just hear what someone has to say, and if they make a convincing argument, they'll go with it instead of saying, hold on, how do I know that person's right? Let me do my homework. So I'm asking people, take your time and do your homework on everything. By the way, we have seen that the isoflavones in soy are terrific for your heart. And they're also good for women who, men, if you have enlarged prostate, isoflavones are good for enlarged prostate. Women, they help prevent breast cancer and ovarian cancer. And finally, we have two studies here that show that when you drink these energy drinks, by the way, if you want an energy drink, just have beet juice with coconut water and take about 1,000 milligrams of D-ribose, and you've got an energy drink. And if you want to really boost it up, take about 2,000 milligrams of L-glycine. You've got a super energy drink. Now, that's a good, healthy energy drink, not the ones they're offering out there. This is from investigators at the University of Alabama have presented the first case study of a patient experiencing a hemorrhagic stroke, that's a brain bleed, following consumption of an energy drink. And this was published in the Journal of Emergency Medicine. So that's serious. And a lot of people, millions of people, are using these energy drinks. I absolutely advocate against it. And for those of you using cholesterol-lowering statin drugs, according to the Journal of the American Medical Association's November 15 issue, lifestyle changes are more important than drugs in lowering cholesterol. And their drugs are recommended for the utilization of statins and maybe Lipitor for the prevention in cardiovascular disease in adults. I would never recommend a drug to prevent a disease, such as cancer, using chemotherapy as a preventative, or statins to prevent heart disease. They are terrible drugs, but lifestyle can reverse these and can prevent them. And so I'm hopeful that people will begin to look at how dangerous these things are. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a brief break. Come right back. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. Continuing with our series of investigations and explorations of how biased, how perverse the American media has become, how easy it is for corporate interests working hand in hand with governmental agencies to create fake news and then sell it to us as if somehow it's real. Yesterday, I gave you an example of fake news through the BBC. Now, I'm going to have you listen to a brief comment by an award-winning reporter for CNN, who talks about how, when she and her team were in Bahrain and wanting to tell the true story of what was going on in Bahrain, remember, Bahrain is a Saudi Arabian-controlled nation, and Saudi provides for its defense. It has control over who runs the country. And it is extraordinarily repressive when it comes to any movement at all, any religious movement, any political movement, women's rights, student rights, freedom of assembly, freedom of speech, the things we take for granted in the United States. They have none of those in Bahrain. Oh, but they do have an American naval base there. So she went over, she did this special. She managed to interview some dissidents. She managed to film some footage that was extremely damaging, showing that the Bahraini authorities were overreacting to a peaceful demonstration and killed people. CNN never aired it. Here's what she has to say.
Bahrain is paying CNN to create content that shows Bahrain in a favorable light, even though CNN says this content, you know, is editorially independent. It doesn't see Bahrain can't affect that. Well, we've seen that with this documentary not airing, and also with the constant struggle I had at CNN to get Bahrain coverage, accurate Bahrain coverage of the human rights abuses on air while I was there. What CNN is doing is they're essentially creating what some people have termed infomercials for dictators. And that's the sponsored content that they're airing on CNN International that's actually being paid for by regimes and governments. I mean, this violates every principle of journalistic ethics because we're supposed to be watchdogs on these governments. We're not supposed to allow them to be paying customers as journalists.
All right, that's just one example from one reporter who had the courage to come forward and tell the truth. I have an issue with CNN that's a little different. Many years ago, we reported upon a physician who had lost his licensed to practice medicine, Dr. Andrew Wakefield. But why he was losing his license at the time and how he was being vilified was what bothered me. Because normally when a physician loses their license, they just lose their license. You don't hear a thing about it. Happens to your state medical boards. Either it's lost permanently or they're suspended for a period of time or they're going to undergo supervised office work, meaning they have to have another physician in the office supervising their work. But this went way beyond all of that. All across the world were stories talking about how Dr. Wakefield was this just terrible, you know, person who wrote lies and made up stories to try to make it seem as if the MMR vaccines, the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, was in some way responsible for some intestinal conditions in 12 children suffering from autism. Well, he never made that statement, as it turns out. But to me, having investigated this kind of story hundreds of times and almost always finding that the doctor was innocent, then you have to ask who benefits from this kind of media campaign. Well, the people who have something to hide benefit. So I investigated it thoroughly, and I came to the conclusion after over a year of investigating, looking at all the articles, interviewing lots of people, that Dr. Andrew Wakefield and his entire team were innocent. These were gastroenterologists. These people were all academics. They were board certified. They had never had a problem. They were members of the different scientific academies in good standing. They had published many journal articles and peer-reviewed journals. And now their article they had published in The Lancet had been rescinded. In effect, it had been recalled, and then the attacks began. There was one person in England named Brian Deer who was leading this attack. And the newspaper of record in the United Kingdom was Rupert Murdoch's. So his publication was leading the attack, and the Medical Council of United Kingdom was the one who sat in judgment. But when I spoke with the lawyers and I looked at the legal file surrounding the case, I saw that there's an enormous amount of evidence that was not allowed at the hearings, and the individual witnesses who were not allowed to testify, and the people who had no qualifications were allowed to testify, and information that should have caused a official investigation, someone who got access to people's medical records who are not a member of the family nor a physician, then that's against the law. So all this showed me that this was a show trial. This was like something Stalin would have done in the 1950s when you want to make an example of someone so that no one else decides to do anything in that field. And also not one of these physicians who had been challenged, including probably the most respected gastroenterologist in the world, never once in his entire career had he had a single blemish, published over 300 articles in scientific literature. So I said, this just stinks. So I asked the scholars in residence, as well as myself, let's just look as deep as we can on this. And another year went by, and we found everything we needed to know that he was innocent. And he had been beaten up pretty bad in the media, especially by Anderson Cooper on CNN. And I thought, why? Would Anderson Cooper have gone to England? Would he put in the homework that we put in to determine whether or not Andrew Wakefield and these other doctors were guilty based upon his own independent investigation? But everyone in the United States in the media who was attacking Wakefield were using the same identical talking points. That's always a red flag, people. When multiple people in the media use the same words, then that means the source of those words is who you should focus on, because that's who's leading the hidden campaign. Those are your agent provocateurs who are using the media, their contacts and control and power within the media, to destroy someone's reputation. Now, I remember going down to New York University, where Andrew Wakefield was having a lecture for a group of people who believed that autism was caused by vaccines. And mind you, Wakefield, to this day, and always has been pro-vaccine. I believe that's a limitation on his part. I've told him that. As I did the producer of Vaxxed, I said just 2 weeks ago, when we were both at a demonstration together, I said to him, I said, look, I've spent 15,000 hours researching this, and I am absolutely unequivocally of the opinion that there is no such thing as a completely safe vaccine, and I have all the studies, thousands, to show you this, some toxicological reports. Give any doctor in the world all the science on mercury, and then say, is this safe to put into someone, especially someone who has no immune system of their own, yet a baby? There's not a doctor who has any intelligence who would say, yeah, this is safe to put in. By what measure do you guarantee that safety? By what scientific observation do you give that? By what reason of scientific logic do you give that? Because if they do, then they're frauds. They don't deserve to be practiced in medicine, which in my opinion, most doctors don't, because of how much death and destruction based upon nothing more than the trolls of the medical industrial establishment. That's why we have over 500,000 dead Americans each year at the hands of the medical practitioners and the judgments they make, not the diseases they were suffering from for which they were seeking help. So anyhow, I said, why is it that everyone in the anti-vaccine movement is pro-vaccine? It's just mind-boggling. And yet it was across the board. Unless you found people who did their homework. The more homework you do, the more research you do, the more scholarship you engage in, the less you are a pro-vaccine advocate. And once you get around 5,000 to 6,000 hours in, then you no longer are going to agree that vaccines are safe or effective for a given individual. But unfortunately, people haven't done the homework. So I said, why don't you do the homework so that you can be, instead of advocating people to take their vaccines like Robert Kennedy, but you don't want a mercury in it. Well, if you're an expert now on mercury being toxic and causing autism, why not look at aluminum as also a cause of autism? So in any case, there was this whole issue with Wakefield that I felt that he was his own worst enemy. Still do, because of how he was approaching this. But his friend, who was the leading physician expert in the intestine in the world, fought it. And he was completely cleared of all charges, clear up to the highest court in Great Britain, equivalent to our Supreme Court. All charges against him were dropped. Now, mind you, the same identical charges were given to Andrew Wakefield. There was no separation. Wakefield didn't have the money, he said, so he didn't go through that process, or he would have been exonerated. So I decided to take on the challenge on behalf of Wakefield, and I invited Brian Deer on the show, and I did a 7-hour special, 7 nonstop hours, going through every aspect, going to England and interviewing the parents of the kids with autism who all had vaccine damage, and the vaccine damage had started in the intestine with the diarrhea and the bloody stools. And one woman said her kid would have diarrhea 7 hours a day. And the gastroenterological reports, and then going through all the medical literature. And then Brian Deer and I squared off for an hour together. And at that time, I said, I hope the people who are in the vaccine movement listen to this 7 hours. Nothing happened. Jump ahead almost 9 years. And suddenly something new happens. We get a call from a Dr. Brian Hooker, who had been on the program several times, and he says, I have got this incredible information. I've been talking with a person who handled the studies on the MMR vaccine and autism in children, a Dr. William Thompson at the CDC, and the other authors of that study, and he's telling me that it was a fraudulent study, that they did wrong. They engaged in unethical, unscientific procedures. And I didn't see the reports, but he said that he had had all these tape conversations, and then all this information was given over to a legislator in the House of Representatives, and to this day, that person has not been able to get Dr. Thompson under oath in front of a committee. The CDC continually blocks Dr. Thompson from being able to come forward under oath as a whistleblower and tell the truth. But the studies show that there were a 324% increase in autism spectrum disorder in African-American boys under the age of 36 months. They knew it. They couldn't fudge the figures. Now, mind you, why is this important? Because this is the same study that would completely exonerated Andrew Wakefield, and this was, it would have shown that Andrew Wakefield and his scientific buddies were correct, and the people in the United States knew this, and that's why they hid it, covered it up. You can only imagine what Dr. Thompson would tell the public on the record, and then how many vaccine companies could be implicated by coming in and putting them on the record. Did you come into a meeting? Did you meet with Gerberding, the head of the CDC? And by the way, Gerberding, who is head of the CDC, was aware of all this at the time. She left her job overseeing vaccine safety at the CDC and went to work as the head of vaccine advocacy at Merck and received $3.6 million. Imagine bringing all those people back and putting them under oath. So if we could find this truth, and if the movie Vaxxed shows this truth, and Wakefield is in the movie Vaxxed, then why can't Anderson Cooper and CNN look for the same truth? Because they would be embarrassed. They would have, it would show them to have engaging into a McCarthyite medical witch hunt, to which they sacrificed the reputation of Andrew Wakefield and sent a broad message out to everyone else. Better not be anti-vaccine, because you see how this guy was dealt with. We could do even the same to you. I consider this the most reprehensible, perverse type of journalism there is. So I believe that we should begin a campaign to boycott Anderson Cooper's program and CNN for being the mothership of corporate propagandizing and bad journalism. I believe that we should boycott, and I also ask that Anderson Cooper come on this program and debate me, you and I, Anderson, on the subject of your excoriation, your vilification, and my exoneration of Andrew Wakefield's reputation. You put forth your facts, I'll put forth mine. You'll be treated with respect, as everyone on this program is. Far more respect than what you should Andrew Wakefield. And I asked Dr. Gupta to come on as well, because he also participated. So I'm going to continue to show you how bad the American media is. Let's now go to another one of these, the Investigating Network coverage of Jill Stein. We're talking about ABC, NBC, and CBS. And here's how much time they gave combined, all of them, during her entire presidential bid. Listen in, please.
Jill Stein just ran for president as the Green Party's candidate. But a lot of people might not even know that, considering how none of our mainstream news outlets hardly even bothered to mention her name. Anytime they all talked about the election, they always used a split screen of Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, making it look like America had to choose only between those two. They practically never put a picture of Stein up there, or Gary Johnson, the other guy that ran, for that matter. It was always just Trump and Clinton. But now, after the election, our news outlets are all talking about Jill Stein all of a sudden. And it's not about how she ran for president and what her platforms might have been, but about the fact that she launched a campaign to contest the election by demanding recounts in a bunch of important states. That made them suddenly interested in what Jill Stein had to say. Newsbusters.org actually did a little investigating into Stein's airtime to see what the real numbers might be. And they found that our three major networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC, only gave Stein a total of 36 seconds in coverage during the entire presidential campaign. 36 seconds! This is a woman who is running for president just as validly as Trump and Clinton. The networks gave those two just endless amounts of coverage. So much coverage, we all wanted to puke from it. But they only managed to give Stein 36 seconds. Spread over all three networks, that comes to just 12 seconds a pop. Barely enough to say hi and bye, let alone spit out one single snippet of a policy platform. On the flip side, Newsbusters found that after Stein announced she was gonna spearhead a recount, the three networks managed to find 7 minutes and 26 seconds of coverage for her in just 4 days. That comes to more than 12 times the coverage in 4 days than they gave her in her entire presidential campaign. Apparently, the networks liked that story a lot. It's so much more dramatic than airing, say, Jill Stein ticking off her economic, environmental, or foreign policy stance. Boring! But she wants to keep the election drama up and make people all mad enough to tune in some more? Now that's entertainment. And that, clearly, is all our mainstream news really is.
That's correct.
Now, keep in mind, what if Jill Stein had been given equal opportunity in time and platforms to share her views? Now, when Jill was on this program, not just this time, but in the last election cycle, I asked her her point of view on 36 progressive issues. She supported every one of them, meaning she supported closing down the 900 foreign military bases and saving over $100 billion a year from that. She agreed that we should disarm our nuclear, start getting a really activating the treaties with all the nations of the world. And if a country does not de-arm themselves, we don't do business with them anymore. No more grants, no more foreign aid at all, including Israel and especially Israel. If you don't take away your nukes, you don't get anything from us. In fact, how about this? We won't even trade with you. See how that impacts a country. But most countries are reasonable. Most countries do not want war. They do not want the type of destruction that could come from nuclear. So you get rid of Pakistan's nukes, India's nukes, and Russia, China, and the United States. That's what she was for. Hillary Clinton, on the other hand, wanted to double down hard on putting $1.5 trillion into new line of nuclear weapons. So could you imagine if Jill Stein was on a stage debating Hillary Clinton? She wanted to get rid of all the treaties completely and renegotiate any trade that we have based upon the quality of our labor force not suffering and our natural environment not being adulterated. Compare that to supporting with 44 separate emails from WikiLeaks showing Hillary Clinton supported going in there and said, don't worry about what I say to the public. And Obama was caught with NAFTA doing the same thing. Well, don't worry about what I say during a campaign. That's just political talk. You know, everything's good afterwards. And indeed, that's what happened. Jill Stein would have shaken everything up. Cleaning up the environment, supporting wind power, solar, wave power, and geothermal, that's Jill Stein. Supporting clean coal, an oxymoron, that's like saying support the living dead. Well, are they alive or are they dead? Well, we'll just say that the dead are living. That's what they say when it means clean coal. There is no such thing as clean coal. That was Hillary and Barack Obama. That was Bill Clinton. So enormous differences. Support universal health care. Enormous differences. So they're not even in the same universal reality. And yet the corporate Democrat liberal community supported Hillary Clinton and then went into their cupcake routine of emotional overplay when she lost. What if Jill Stein would have been there? That's what this means. 36 seconds, you don't give someone 36 seconds in a year and a half campaigning unless you don't want them and their message. Because if a message is heard enough times, and if the person sharing the message has good background, good credentials, you want a woman to president, you want Hillary Clinton, you want Jill Stein. Look at Jill. First, she's a board-certified physician, Harvard grad, and she has spent decades helping on causes without it being selfishly bringing it back to herself. Hillary Clinton, everything she's done is anti-women, anti-children, anti-life. And I can show you the people who are mourning today because of the policies of Bill and Hillary Clinton. So you're not even in the same, capacity to understand an issue when it's so radically different, unless you exclude all the differences. Clear the room of everybody that's got a good idea, and the only two people you have left are people with bad ideas, with bad attitudes. It's just one seems less narcissistic than the other. That's what this means. And that's why we should say no to the media. I refuse to watch NBC, CBS, CNN, because it's like sticking your face in a full toilet bowl hoping to get some clean water. It isn't possible. So why do it? They are so corrupt, so biased, so jaundiced, and yet with a mindset of arrogance and ego that they're the best. They are not. Now, I want you to hear something else here. By the way, just to give you an idea how bad it is, this is something you have not been told. The alternative media has reported for more than a decade that the Iraq war has increased terrorism. For example, quote, the U.S. has undertaken regime change against Arab leaders we don't like for six decades. We overthrew the leader of Syria in 49, Iran in 53, that's Mossadegh, Iraq twice, Afghanistan twice, Turkey, Libya, and other oil-rich countries. Neoconservatives planned regime change throughout the Middle East and North Africa yet again in 1991. American politicians admit that the Iraq war was about oil, not stopping terrorism, and much of the war on terror is really a fight for natural gas, or to force the last few holdouts into dollars and private central banking. And the U.S. military described terror attacks on the United States as, quote, a small price to pay for being a superpower. A senior officer on the Joint Chiefs of Staff told State Department counterterrorism director Sheehan he had heard terrorist strikes characterized more than once by colleagues at the Joint Chiefs of Staff as, quote, small price to pay for being a superpower. Security experts, including both conservatives and liberals, agree that waging war in the Middle East weakens national security and increases terrorism. For example, James K. Feldman, former professor of decision analysis and economics at the Air Force Institute of Technology and the School of Advanced Air Power Studies, and other experts say that foreign camp occupation is the main cause of terrorism. We being on their soil and we being roughshod over them. University of Chicago professor Robert Papp, who specializes in international security affairs, agrees. We fought the longest, most expensive wars in American history, but we're less secure than before, and there are more terror attacks than ever. Remember, Al-Qaeda wasn't even in Iraq until the United States invaded that country. If we want to stop terrorism, we have to stop overthrowing Arab leaders and invading Arab countries to grab their oil. So that's how it goes. And where was the mainstream media in calling out and challenging the presidents of the United States, the heads of Secretary of State, the heads of the Defense Department? Not once did we call them out on this. So we created ISIS, we created the war on terror, we created the terrorism, and now we're getting the blowback. So why don't you call it out? Why don't you say what it is? A separate thing, how many times have we heard how important NATO is to our future and to our security and to the security of its member nations? Russia hasn't invaded anyone, nor has China. But much of it started based upon what happened with Milosevic. Remember, he was the tyrant, he was the terror. This is from Neil Clark at RT, quote, the International Criminal Court, exonerated the late Milosevic, the former president of Yugoslavia, for war crimes committed in the Bosnia War, approves again, we should take NATO claims regarding its official enemies with a grain of salt. For the past 20-odd years, neocon commenters and liberal interventionists, and by the way, Pacific has a lot of those liberal interventionists, pundits, have been telling us at every possible opportunity that Milosevic, a democratically elected leader in a country where over 20 political parties freely operated, was an evil genocidal dictator who was to blame for all the deaths in the Balkans in the 1990s. But the official narrative, just like the one that told us that in 2003 Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, which could be launched within 45 minutes, was a deceitful one designed to justify a regime change op, which the Western elites had long desired. The International Criminal Court's conclusion that one of the most demonized figures of the modern era was innocent of the most heinous crimes he was accused of really should have made headlines across the world. But it has made none. Even the International Criminal Court buried it deep in its 2,590-page verdict in the trial Bosnian Serb leader Karadzic, who was convicted in March of genocide and war crimes and crimes against humanity. There was no official announcement or press conference regarding Milosevic's exoneration. We've got journalist and researcher Andy Wilcoxon to thank for flagging it up for us. How very different it all was when the trial of the so-called Butcher of the Balkans began in February 2002. CNN provided blanket coverage of what was described as, quote, the most important trial since Nuremberg, end quote. Of course, Milosevic's guilt was taken as a given, quote, from CNN, when the sentence comes and he disappears into that cell, no one is going to hear from him again, end quote, declared lawyer Judith Amirati from the Coalition of International Justice, an organization which had the former U.S. ambassador to Yugoslavia, Warren Zimmerman, as an advisory board member. Anyone who dared to challenge the NATO line was labeled, quote, a Milosevic apologist, or worse, a genocide denier by the imperial truth enforcers. But amid all the blather and the hype surrounding the trial of the century, it soon became apparent the prosecution was in deep, deep trouble. And then it goes on to talk about how, quote, 80% of the prosecution's opening statements would have been dismissed by a British court as heresy, it was said. So, where is CNN? Where are all the talking heads and all the major media who railed against this and allowed this to be the justification for Bill and Hillary Clinton to bomb Yugoslavia, including intentionally, with malice aforethought, bombing schools, hospitals, medicine-making factories, civilian infrastructure, which all are violations of the Geneva Code. So at the end of the day, he was innocent, and they were wrong. And that's the mainstream media that can never say, we're sorry. In fact, I believe that everyone who participated in promoting the war, including all the embedded journalists who went over to Iraq and promoted it, and all the people on Pacifica who promoted the invasion of Libya, they should resign or we should boycott them. Because if you're going to promote bloodletting, if you're going to promote the death of women and children, Lou Hill would be holding his head in disgrace that you are allowed to stay on the air. You do not deserve to be on the air. Why don't you go over and become a member of the Heritage Institute or the Free Enterprise Institute so no longer do you have to disguise your real intent and motives? And for CNN and the rest of the pimps for the major corporations, we know that you're a pimp. You just don't dress like one, but you are. and shame on you for just being the purveyors of propaganda that has led to death and destruction. It's one thing if you were wrong and apologized, learned a lesson, and then had commentaries about what you learned from creating fake news. It's something else to hold yourself with self-righteous appreciation of your being wrong. If you're wrong and you know you're wrong and you hide that, deny it, dismiss it, or attack those who want to bring it to your attention, you shouldn't be in the media. Those are my thoughts, my opinions. I'm Gary Nall. I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen today. And remember, our archives are where 99% of the people listen to this program each day when they have time. Let me give you the phone number that you can call from any phone, hardline, land-based phone or cell phone or your computer phone, and download our programs. 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. Thank you all. I'll see you tomorrow at noon. Have a nice day.
I'm running. I'll be true. Take a chance on me. Let your light turn green. Maybe I've got to know. Give me some kind of clue. Should I stay or go? Let me love you like the lover that you used to know. Turn the key and let me in through that same old door. But I lost it. Now I've got a broken heart to mend. But listen, I don't care what the cost is. I know I got to find.